This is Changemakers with Katie Gore, finding the right solutions for the affordable housing community.
This week's changemaker is Catherine Buell, the director of Amazon's Housing Equity Fund. Catherine helped launch and oversees Amazon's Housing Equity Fund, a more than $2 billion commitment to preserve and create over 20,000 affordable housing units. Before joining Amazon, Catherine chaired the DC Historic Preservation Review Board and served as president and CEO of the Atlanta Housing Authority. Catherine, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
There's so many things I want to cover while we have you here. And just from reading your bio, you are really no stranger to affordable housing. And I want to work through all of the initiatives that you're bringing from Amazon. But first, let's learn a little bit more about you, because you've got a really unique story having interned at HUD, where your mother worked for 40 years.
Yes.
What was that like getting started from really the family ground floor involvement in affordable housing?
Well, I got to see firsthand somebody that was committed to affordable housing and quite frankly understood that affordable housing can be something that we'd like to talk about, but there is a lot of work that goes in on the administrative side. And I got to meet a lot of people who were dedicated to affordable housing. My mother started at HUD when HUD was a brand new agency. She started in the relocation office, and she has a number of stories about her time there, ranging from the time that her team was held in a very tense meeting with the Black Panthers and the level of respect she showed for them, for their ability to speak up for their community, to the fact that I actually still have cross in my house with stained glass from the Birmingham bombing, because her boss just happened to be in Birmingham at the time working on a housing initiative and was able to get some of the stained glass and made his team members mementos.
Wow.
For a lot of the HUD leadership, yeah, particularly those who were there in the early days, this was a new endeavor. And so the theme and the passion and the commitment around housing is something that I've been around my entire life.
So fast forward a couple of steps. Have there been experiences along the way prior to this position that you're currently holding that have really evolved your path and shaped you even further?
Absolutely. Right after coming out of law school, when I started working at a law firm called Patton Boggs, I brought my house in historic Anacostia. It's in Ward 8. It's in Southeast DC, which is a relatively low income area here in the nation's capital. And I bought my house because it was pretty, and I really liked the street that I was on, and I did not fully appreciate all of the issues that my neighbors and my community faced in Ward 8. And as I got more interested and more curious about what was happening in my community, that really sparked my understanding of, one, how significant these issues are. They're not theoretical for so many families, whether it's community development and investment, access to quality foods, and living in a food desert, to having housing that people can afford, you see the real-time implications for so many community members. And that's when I started to get active in both community development as well as in the housing space.
Because you've been in this for a while, what is your official opinion on what are some of the challenges to affordable housing?
Well, first, I'd like to say that affordable housing is a housing supply issue, number one. The U.S. economy is not producing enough housing, and we had the pleasure of supporting Up for Growth's National Housing Supply Report, and they pointed out that the United States has over 800,000 units of housing that it is needed. And those housing supply constraints really do end up acutely impacting low to moderate income households, but also all of us are feeling the pressures. And so when we talk about affordable housing, we need to be mindful that this issue is indicative of a broader issue in the United States. The United States is not producing enough housing at any of the incomes and in places where people want to live. And so there are issues like zoning constraints, community debates, there's funding constraints that restrict the ability of the U.S. economy to produce enough affordable housing where it is needed most, which really creates an opportunity for partners like Amazon to come in, try new innovative approaches, but also start to contribute to the challenge, because the challenge is too big for any one individual, even the federal government, even state and local governments, to take on.
So let's talk about this. You're the director of Amazon's Housing Equity Fund, and you've now been there probably, what, 2 years or so?
Yes, 2 years.
And your team have launched a $2 billion, and I say that with a B, housing equity fund. What is that? Well, first of all, what's it like being in such an amazing position with Amazon? Let's talk about that before we talk about the fund.
My Amazon journey. And what's fascinating is that I joined Amazon to help Amazon think through its affordable housing strategy. The Housing Equity Fund was not even an idea. It was not conceived of. I had come over from a nonprofit. I worked for the nonprofit for 1 year in my entire life. And I was able to come in and help think through if a company were to invest in a product like affordable housing, if I had my wish list, how would I approach it? And our initial proposal to our leadership was for a $2 billion fund. And what's fascinating is that our leadership, who was Jay Carney at the time, did not blink at the number. Our leadership fully understood how important affordable housing was. The company wanted to do something in affordable housing. But also the scale and the size of the numbers did not intimidate Amazon, which was really critical because our first investment was a $380 million investment through a nonprofit called the Washington Housing Conservancy that was looking to buy a building a block away from HQ2. If Amazon were intimidated by those numbers, there's no way we would have been able to support the conservancy in making such a significant acquisition that over time will significantly pay off, not only for the residents who are living there, but to having a more inclusive community in and around HQ2 where we're building out our footprint. So we went from being able to pitch an idea in the summer after I started, summer of 2020, to launching the $2 billion effort in January of 2021. And I will say that was unreal. It was like holding on to a spaceship, a rocket ship, and watching it launch. Watching news go around the world and really impact so many of our communities. People were excited. People were in disbelief. People had questions. And we have been running ever since we launched the fund to meet our full goal of having 20,000 units either preserved or created in our three hometown communities of Washington, D.C., Arlington region, Nashville, Tennessee, and the Puget Sound.
You know, people can work their entire careers and not see $2 billion worth of housing investment. So you are in a remarkable position with a company that has leadership and buy-in to do what you're doing. So this is quite miraculous if you think about this.
It is. And there are so many different ways that we can approach it. I personally am honored and humbled by the leadership that we have. There are so many features of this program ranging from the creative use of our capital funding through our Treasury Department. Our Treasurer, Tony Massone, was a wonderful leader for us. And typically people don't think about treasurers as being an advocate for unique and innovative social impact funding vehicles. Our SVP for Corporate Global Real Estate, John Shuttler, has been a major anchor and was the force behind the creation of Mary's Place on our Seattle campus. We have a 200-bed family shelter actually located and embedded within our Seattle headquarters. And his bold thinking led to the creation of the $2 billion fund because Amazon saw that we could then go big. We no longer had to take smaller seed investments and small dollar investments. We could do something that would have a major impact. To folks like Alice Shoup and our public policy leads, Brian Kenner and Guy Palumbo, being able to have internal leaders who really believe in the work. And lastly, our new CEO, Andy Jassy, was actually part of our thought leadership on this and really honed in on the equity component. That allowed us to not only invest in affordable housing, but also to invest in affordable housing and directly target minority-led organizations and minority developers doing work in this space and making sure that we're filling out not only our mission of producing more housing, but doing it in a way that is equitable.
I want to take a moment and applaud this effort because this is something that's obviously very needed when you look at the statistics of how many real estate developers of color are actually out in the landscape. And you guys have committed millions of dollars to pilot a program. So tell us more what this kind of a program, whether it's capital funding, mentoring, training, like tell us all of the pieces to how you have created this.
Absolutely. So out of the $2 billion fund, we have committed close to 25% of the fund to minority-led organizations and minority developers. And that is because we've been intentional about our outreach. When I first started with Amazon, and it is no slight at all to Amazon, we had a list of about 30 unsolicited proposals, and none of those were with minority-led organizations. And what that signaled to me is that people of color just don't have those relationships with funders or corporate leaders to be able to even submit an unsolicited proposal. So we did a lot of targeted outreach specifically to diverse organizations. And what we found is that there was just an imbalance amongst the three different jurisdictions. In a place like Washington, D.C., which has invested in diverse development partners for years, for decades, there is a plethora of developers of color who can work on affordable housing projects at scale. One of those is Shire Lynch. Shire Lynch is positioned to have a significant portion of that $2 billion fund. He is an African-American man who leads one of the leading development firms in HQ2. He actually acquired the Barcroft. The Barcroft is one of our biggest investments. It's a 1,300-unit community, 60 acres, where we partnered with Arlington County to invest over $300 million so that that community could be preserved as affordable in perpetuity for 99 years. But we didn't want to stop there. We wanted to take the next step and invest in smaller developers because we also knew if we did not build the bench, when we hopefully create Fund 2, we would not have the same level of diversity. And so we created what we called our accelerator program. We invested $21 million through four different organizations, Capital Impact Partners in the Washington, D.C. area, Urban League of Middle Tennessee in Nashville, Tennessee, and LISC in Puget Sound, who had just opened an office, and finally Enterprise Community Development to provide general equitable development grants for those firms that are in an early stage and need more pre-development and or operational capital. Specifically for our fellowship program, we targeted and we are working with about 40 minority developers who are doing affordable housing work to help support and accelerate the work that they're doing. We're providing mentorship. We have some of the best mentors in each of the regions who are doing development deals, helping to advise these emerging developers. We're providing training on issues ranging from how do you make sure that your financials are in good standing so that when you do go to a lender and you do seek additional financing, that you have all the materials that you need that a lender would traditionally expect. How do you make sure that you structure your deals in a way that a lender will be able to understand, and what kinds of partnerships do you need to be building out? And then lastly, and most importantly, providing access to capital. That is a major barrier for so many developers of color to be able to enter into the market. For a lot of projects, you're carrying anywhere from $125,000 in expenses to north of $1 million, in some cases, $2 million of expenses before you get to closing. Most developers of colors don't have that kind of capital. And so having a partner like Amazon come in, fund those early expenses, but also provide the background support, add in additional partners who can support those firms. We're hoping that we're going to see all 40 of those firms succeed and have projects that they can be proud of, but do it in a timeline that is truly accelerated, that they would not be able to accomplish without the support of something like the Housing Equity Fund.
So this Housing Equity Accelerator Program, are you planning on replicating this in other areas, or is this primarily your mission to kind of keep it with, you know, where your offices are located?
That is the billion-dollar question, no pun intended.
No pun intended, right?
We get a lot of demand, and you would be surprised at places that we get demand from. We get demand nationally across the country because the housing supply issues are everywhere. They're from the coast in Alabama to California to New York to Boston to the middle of the country, Chicago, and places like Atlanta. But we are also seeing more demand for this kind of innovative financing in international locations. And so part of what we're doing is, one, making sure that we are able to accomplish our goals and getting to the 20,000 units and really perfecting the operation that we have. But thinking about how does somebody like an Amazon Housing Equity Fund show up in a new market and help? We need partners when we enter into a new market who are capable of absorbing the capital. We need local governments who are willing to participate. Quite frankly, our local government partners have been phenomenal. We have been humbled and astonished by how much they've locked arms with the work that we're doing. But because they control so much, not only can they be a financial contributor, but they can make the zoning, the permitting, and the execution of projects so much easier. And then we also want to see other non-traditional partners come to the table. We don't want to just see only the housing agency at the table and only the local government elected officials and the advocates at the table. We also want to see other partners. We've seen in our three jurisdictions, transit agencies come to the table. There are healthcare organizations and education organizations that are also interested in housing. That allows us to come in and be more effective when we're moving in a way that is creates a collective synergy as opposed to just Amazon coming in and trying to shift some very, very tough and tight housing situations.
It's very exciting when you can see non-traditional partners, because I don't even know if I want to use that word, because we all should be traditional partners. Like, is this part of your strategic plan that you're going to, you know, assess and figure out whether how you move forward, if you move forward, or is there something else that's going to drive where you guys go from this point?
It is, absolutely. So looking at things like, what are those partners in the market that we could leverage the work that they're already doing? And I'll take HQ2 as an example. HQ2, through our Metropolitan Planning Organization, which is called the Washington Metropolitan Council of Governments, for years had been doing work with regional leaders to set the groundwork for not only affordable housing investments. They passed a regional housing resolution where over 30 of the local jurisdictions, meaning all of the small cities, counties, agreed that they would try to increase the amount of affordable housing that is created through their jurisdictions. They also wanted to focus on creating those affordable housing opportunities near transit. And so they coupled their affordable housing plan with an overlap and a look at where are those transit nodes that we should be investing in heavily to make sure that we're able to continue to reduce the cost of living for moderate and low income households. Where are those investments most needed? So we'd be looking at, are there jurisdictions where that work has already been done, where an Amazon Housing Equity Fund could come in on the great planning work that has been done, great local investments, whether it's infrastructure or education. What that typically leads to are there partners that have resources like excess land that can be developed for affordable housing and are willing to use those resources to benefit housing. Is there a gap in the market, for example, in support for those emerging minority development firms that we could actually be a value add? So part of the way that we're going to be looking at it going forward is, where are the biggest opportunities for Amazon to be a benefit rather than just coming in? And it's great to say that we're creating 20,000 units, but what does that market need most in terms of intervention and creative capital?
Those are great platforms to launch from and great ideas. So I'm glad you guys are considering those. Okay, well, hold on, Catherine. We have to stop here, but coming up in the second part of my discussion with Catherine Buell, the director of Amazon's Housing Equity Fund, Catherine talks about what it means for her to be part of the team committed to addressing the long-standing shortage of affordable housing.
It's really a humbling dream and honor to be able to do this kind of work and do it with a significant budget, but also partners and leaders who are truly committed to making the impact.
Thanks for listening to Changemakers with Katie Gore. To find out more about Katie, go to quadel.com. That's QUADEL.com. This has been a production of Forbes Books Radio.